Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Hello, and welcome to episode 17 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Oh, 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 so in love.
I mean, it's not Valentine's Day. What was that?
You know what this, which chapter we will be discussing tonight?
And
there may not be actual love in it yet, but it's something develops. Anyway, it's the theme, kind of. Weddings and love. I just can't separate the two.
I know, but it's really more of a shotgun wedding.
Yeah.
I don't have shotguns.
Without the pregnancy.
What would it be, like a...
pistol?
A Dirk? Dirk wedding?
Skidoo. Okay. So let's get on to stuff.
All right. So announcements this week. It wasn't a really announcement-heavy week. We had two new pics from Outlander Star's Instagram account. There was a rainy shot that was reminiscent of the first shots that they released,
mm-hmm.
were released, but not by them.
Of filming that they did not release.
Right. It was like the night shot in the rain.
With all the big lights.
Looking at the hotel and the big lights. So it was kind of, it looked like it was something more from that scene. So everyone seemed to be posting, this is the scene with the ghost, or I wonder if we can see the ghost. Because we all think about the ghost when we think of rain.
And it looks, if I'm not mistaken, it was a picture of a person with an umbrella.
Correct.
Which we believe is probably Frank. May not be. But
yes.
That's my first thought.
I would think
thought.
So,
it's
but isn't he not supposed to have an umbrella? Isn't he supposed to come back to the room, literally soaked?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it was someone else walking up the lane. But
they gave him an umbrella.
Whoever it is, it's a guy.
Correct.
In that clothing.
Definitely a guy.
And then I zoomed in to the area where that window is, mm-hmm. the light's coming out of the window, and maybe my brain is wishful thinking, is making it up. And no, I could not make out detail, but it looked like someone was standing under the window or near to the window.
I don't know, that kind of looks like a gargoyle.
And I also see other umbrellas, so
yeah, a big red one.
So, okay, Ginger, just quash that. Wasn't whether this is Frank or not doesn't really matter, but in the book Frank literally like walks by him and kind of stops, right? He's near him, he's not he doesn't talk to him, but
no,
he notices
he
him.
He's behind him first, and then he gets walked through apparently, or brushed by, like as the ghost turns and sees him and kind of goes.
But does Frank stop, or is the ghost has stopped looking? The ghost is still,
correct,
and he's looking up at the window from wherever he is. He's looking up at Claire.
Yes.
And Frank is approaching the hotel, the B&B, and he sees him from a distance, and then, but do you remember if he stops?
I don't think so,
because he talks about seeing certain detail in his brooch and all of that.
But that all happened very quickly as he walked by. Like, we talked about that in an earlier podcast about how ridiculous his, like, short-term memory was to have seen all of that.
So then I guess he didn't stop. He didn't stop.
I think he did stop, because they both stopped and saw Claire in the window.
Okay.
Anyway.
So go on. There was that one picture.
We also got a shot of, and I love this shot. And
this
maybe
was so homey and nesting.
Cooking,
I don't know.
I want this kitchen. And I'm sure it would be a bear to cook in, because I would not be familiar at all with how to use an open fire, cooking over a fire. But
I just thought,
I covet that
I kitchen. Just have two words. Mrs. Fitz?
I know.
I can't wait.
I like to imagine she's just outside of the shot. We just can't see her because she's busy doing something or telling a maid what to do.
And all the herbs or something or other, or the whatever, hanging. Oh,
copper
my
bottom
gosh.
Pots. I mean.
Oh, it's a shame we didn't have this picture to discuss last week when we had Teresa here. Outlander Kitchen, where was this? Actually, no. Outlander Stars, where was this last week?
And Outlander Kitchen, where are you?
Well, we know where she is.
She's on her island.
Exactly. She's on her island.
Anyway, I literally want to be in that kitchen. And
I'll just play with
bread of some kind.
Yeah, I was like, I'll just play with the flour. I don't care if I get dirty. That's That I think it would be fun to be on that set. That's just so gorgeous.
Any set. I mean, I would like to be on any of the sets.
That's true.
Anywho. So before we get to the big news of the week, we did have notification of an event going on in Scotland. So if you're in Scotland, this would be really awesome to go to. It's the Robert Burns Humanitarian Concert taking place in Ayr, I believe.
Mm-hmm. The event is in January, as Summer said. Did you say the date already?
No, I didn't. Okay. It's January 22nd.
And it is Eddie Reader, is a very well-known Scottish singer, is at this event. And the event also features Little Fire featuring Milla Cran. And I apologize, we both apologize up front for any butchery of any names. It also features Gemma Kate and Sean Kennedy. And drum roll, please.
She really does do the worst drum rolls.
I'm sorry, that's not very good. My announcement of the next person has, my drum roll is not worthy of that person. So. Last but not least, friend of the show, Scottish folk singer Ailey Grant. Yay, Ailey! We saw on Twitter and I was a little mortified that I didn't see her announcement until a few days later, and I was like, oh, how embarrassing. But yeah, so Ailey is quite lovely, and Ailey, we're really excited, and even if Summer couldn't come, I don't care. If I had the money or the time, I would be there in a heartbeat to be in that audience, even again in the nosebleed seats, I don't care. It's a great cause, a benefit concert, and I would love the opportunity to see you perform live as well as Ms. Reader. So that is, I think, so if you're in Scotland, please do look into that. You can Google it or you can find out some details by contacting 01292-288-235. And via email, you can write enquiries, that's ENQUIRIES, @ comebacktoayrshire.com. That's comebacktoayrshire.com. So please, if you're anywhere in the area, if you're in Scotland and you can go and call us and let us know how it was, because we're not going to be able to make it. So Ailey and everyone else who's featured and Eddie Reader, good on you. We look forward to hearing about the event.
So lastly, the big announcement of the week is that they will be providing a live feed of the Los Angeles event in January for anyone who couldn't RSVP or who couldn't make it because of the distance in between where they live and the actual event. So we obviously plan on being there, but if we weren't going to be there, this is such a great new thing. And now on to the read-along. This is chapter 14, A Marriage Takes Place.
Last week we left Claire face first in the crook of her arm. We don't know. Face first on the bar or something. Or at least cheek on the bar, having fallen asleep or having passed out talking to a fly in her drunkenness.
Definitely passed out.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. So this week, or this chapter, Claire awakes in her shift in bed. And my question was, how did she get there? I don't think it was herself. I mean, it was probably the innkeeper's wife who is involved in this chapter.
It was probably one of the dudes carried her upstairs and dropped her in the bed. Now, I'm not saying they stripped her down to her shift. I'm just saying.
I don't think some lady carried her up there. No, I think it was probably one of the men who took her up there. But yeah, I just don't think. Since the shift was basically, but the shift was like the only thing, is your underwear. That's your underwear. So yeah, I don't think it would have been a guy to take off her stuff down to her shift.
But shifts of that day might have been as substantial as dresses today.
Some ladies.
Which would have been totally, out of propriety to be seen in it in that day and age. It would be the equivalent of being seen in, I guess, in your bra and pants.
In your underwear, yeah. So I just thought, how did you get there? So what I wanted to do after I started reading this chapter, I thought, I should count the number of times she wakes up and goes back to sleep or faints. And it's like probably like 4 times, but I didn't keep a tally chart or anything. So basically, she wakes up, finds herself tucked in bed with a blanket on her and in her shift, and then she goes back to sleep, still having this hangover. She wakes again, and Murta's there. And then he's like kind of looming over her or looking at her, and then he She looks again and he's gone. She tries to go back to sleep, but a woman comes in and opens the shutters, makes lots of noise, and rips the quilt from on top of her and tells her that they have to get her ready for her day. She bodily pulls her up to a sitting position and basically rips, she says rips, but takes her shift off of her. And I thought, so much for a lady in waiting. I mean, that's kind of, that's not,
she was a lady of action.
She was doing her job. That's
true. She was a lady of action. She wasn't waiting.
And Diana writes, this is the innkeeper's wife. She writes that she is giving Claire intimate attentions. And I thought, okay. She's kind of like surveying her as she's standing there, probably nude, trying to think, okay, what are we going to do? What do we need to get ready for the day?
She's like, how do we fix this?
How do we fix
what's going on right now?
She's dressed and given port to drink. And I wrote down, just because I love this phrase, Claire gets her hair did. Mm-hmm. But at this point, it's not truly did. It's just, it's like kind of combed out or started. And as she's being... As she's being combed, I guess.
I hoped that it wasn't done because it was like she said that they did her hair and then she went back to bed.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm like, I hope that wasn't her final preparation for her hair.
And as she's getting combed or whatever it is, Ned and Myrta come back in and they look at her with, and I put this in quotes because this is Diana's word, disapprobation. And I thought, I could pretty much tell what that means, but I did look it up. And it means the state of being disapproved or condemnation. So they looked at her quite, I guess, disapprovingly, probably because of they're thinking this is your wedding day. You should look a little bit more respectable. Who knows? I mean, or the fact that she was hungover.
Right. They probably were more disappointed in the fact that she got, you know.
Toasted.
More than toasted. Hammered. Obliviated.
And they were murmuring between themselves, and then they left. So she probably could get an idea that they were just like, what the hell are we going to do with her? How are we going to make this better?
Well, but I think that they also were sizing her up because we find out later.
Yeah, they're looking for a dress.
They were looking for a dress for her, so.
So then Claire's hair is done, officially, and she describes it as, Claire's hair is in a knot at the crown, and curls were picked loose to tumble down in the back. And she had ringlets in the front of her ears. And then I thought, I wonder how much to that. Because that's pretty easy to reproduce. I wonder what Claire will look like. The dress, too, which we'll get to. But her hair and the flowers and all that. I just wonder, this is something that is so simple to reproduce and be true to the book that it would seem silly not to. But who knows? I mean, they might want to use different coloring for Katrina. I don't know.
I'm envisioning, like, Sense and Sensibility here. Very, like... tightly pulled back, but they always had little ringlets in the front, yeah, and little curls around their forehead.
I just can't see her hair as perfectly coiffed as, say,
one of those characters. I'm sure it was before she took a nap on it.
Well,
I think that when she's in charge of her hair, it's not like that. But when somebody else does her hair, which happens a lot in this book,
mm-hmm,
other people taking care of her and doing her hair and making her presentable for the time.
It looks better.
She does look more presentable.
Or more put together. Okay. And then after everyone leaves and she's in the room and looking, they leave her with a looking glass. She says, "We who are about to die," and then salutes herself and falls back on the bed, mm-hmm, and falls back to sleep. And I'm like, okay, that's funny. You know, what is there a meaning to that? And I looked that up, and it's a quote from Suetonius's De Vita Caesarum or Caesarum, depending on if it's
so it's Latin,
ancient or medieval Latin. Yes. And basically, captives and criminals who were fated to die during mock naval battles would say this because the whole point of having the mock battle was to train the troops. The troops were not going to hopefully be killed. It was going to be these captives or criminals. So yes, you're right. She falls back on the bed. She falls asleep. And she's dreaming now of fields and grassy fields and wildflowers. And she wakes up to see an entire party of people in her room. I was like, I couldn't imagine. Wedding day or no? If I woke up and I saw this many people in my room, I think I might just scream. It would be a little disconcerting. So
everything
Ned,
about her journey so far has been
disconcerting.
I think at this point, anything could happen and she'd probably roll with it.
Well,
I mean, she obviously doesn't agree with all of it, but she still kind of goes along.
She's like, look, I just went out 200 years in the back.
Whoa.
200 years back in time, not in the back. I don't know what.
Easy there, Tiger.
Why is that funny?
I don't know.
In the back of what? The Jeep? I mean, that doesn't make... It doesn't make sense. She went 200 years back in time, and yeah, pretty much, if she can accept that, anything else is going to be like, dude, that's water off my back.
Right? Totally.
Okie dokie. So she wakes up, and there's Ned, Murta, the innkeeper's wife, and their son. And
they brought his son? I mean, that's so ridiculous. So like, hey, anyone else want to come?
The son has a role. He was holding tons of flowers. There's also a young woman, a sempstress with a P, and I looked that up. I'm pretty sure it was a seamstress, but yes, it's according to Merriam-Webster, it is a variant of seamstress. So Ned was carrying a dress, and the dress had like, it was a low-neck gown and heavy cream-colored satin, had a separate bodice with lots and lots of cloth-covered buttons, each with a gold fleur-de-lis, bell-shaped sleeves, and lace at the sleeves and the neckline, and the skirt of chocolate brown velvet. And I realize this is the 18th century, and I realize that our idea, our modern idea of a white, quote-unquote, white wedding dress.
Didn't come till Queen Victoria.
Exactly. Hello, kitty. You stole my...
Woo-woo.
Anyway, so...
It never happens. I'm taking total credit for this.
I actually had to look... I thought it was pretty modern. I knew it was modern or contemporary-ish. Oh, I guess modern is a better word. But I didn't know exactly the time, place, point, although it makes perfect sense that it was Victoria, Queen Victoria. But absolutely, that was, up till that time, it was women...
Wore their best.
They wore their best, but it would be, there was no kind of...
There was not a strict color.
No.
That needed to be worn until it became fashionable.
But it's, and I do admit, it was my 20th and 21st century eyes that we wanted to, or at least I wanted to paint the scene with the traditional white. So when I, it came across like a hit over the head, something hit me in the forehead, like a chocolate brown velvet dress, what? But yeah, I mean, it's definitely not, it's before the time of Queen Victoria, so it makes perfect sense. So I wondered again how closely they would stick to Diana's description. Again, it's something that they're creating. They're creating the costume, so they could do this with as much, maybe even more detail, but as much detail as Diana gives. I'm sure it would be pretty easy to...
I think that...
But the coloring may be different for Katrina.
Given how pivotal this scene is, that being a fan of the books, that I think that the costumer... That Terry is going to try to make this dress.
Oh, that's true. I forgot Terry is such a huge
fan. I can see her wanting to
make
Diana's dress. The dress in Diana's book. I think it's such a big thing that I think it's going to be important to her. So I anticipate it being very close to the description.
And there are also petticoats in the room. So that I always forget how big these skirts are going to be. The dresses are going to come out to here, like a foot or two away from your body. Because the whole point was not to show your form. She has... yellow roses and white asters pinned in her hair. Something that gets me every time I read this. The gown smelled of its previous owner. I'm just like, I wonder what the owner did. I mean, it could just be the body odor. She's very much still Claire as they make their way downstairs. She says to Murta behind his back, "You can't make me do this." And then she realizes she's like, nah. Yeah, it's just one last effort of herself. The people in the pub, the people on the first floor down there are chatting and talking and apparently having a good time and drinking and hanging out. And as he sees Claire come down the stairs, Dougal stops. He is quiet, and that makes everybody else grow silent. And he basically gives Claire the once over, or twice over, we don't know, like up and down, like, how you doing?
Well, I think for the first time that we see, looks at her... And sees her as a woman as opposed to
as a hassle.
As an
English woman hassle.
Correct.
Claire looks back at him, full face, and she says, in her mind she's saying, "It was some time since a man had looked at me that way." And she nodded back to Dougal. And then people started giving her compliments. And I wrote this in capital letters and I highlighted it. Murta smiles, everybody. I had to highlight that because he's known for being like a little what?
I said nothing.
No, I didn't say you said
I know,
anything.
But you're looking
asking
at
you,
me. Like...
I'm asking you for a word. Like he just
doesn't smile.
He's grim. He's grim and quiet. So she noticed that everyone was there except for the bridegroom.
She was very hopeful upon seeing that.
Yeah, she thought, stolen away in the night. Maybe there was a way that he would get out of it and then she would be, or he wanted out of it and he had escaped or something. And unfortunately, or fortunately for us, since we have a
book. Well, the book would have been over.
we need this to happen for there to be a book and subsequent books. The door opens and Diana writes, "Sun came out in the person of James." Because the weather was not so hot that day. It wasn't bad, but not so hot. And she said he was positively resplendent. And Claire's mouth falls open and stays open.
Slack-jawed. Totally slack-jawed.
Yeah. So this is, yeah.
But I don't blame her.
Oh, no. She describes Jamie as breathtaking in full regalia, as having thick red gold hair, and as having a tartan of brilliant crimson and black. And she describes his entire outfit, actually in quite great detail. And I cannot wait to see Sam in this getup. That's all I'm going to say. And Jamie bows very courtly to her and says, "Your servant, ma'am." His eye is glinting with mischief. So this dude, he's always got, even in the most, as we'll find out, even in the most grave of circumstances, this guy makes jokes. He's very funny.
I've gotten kind of attached to the Mackenzie tartan they've created for this show. I don't know if I'm going to want to see him in a red and black tartan.
The Mackenzie one, yeah, the one we've seen him in, it's very nice. But I can't wait just till this scene for it to go boom in your face. Bright, beautiful Fraser. Sorry, Fraser. Not the je, but the z, the s. And her reply to his, "Your servant, ma'am," is, "Oh." And even Dougal is at a loss for words. And
well, but there's a reason for that.
Yes. And we find that out shortly. He asks him, he's like, "Aren't you concerned someone may see you?" And basically, the reader at this point, we don't know the total reason, but we can kind of guess that something to do with his tartan, something to do with his dress, could give his true identity away. That's all we can guess. So maybe he's not a McTavish. Well,
everyone knows he's not a McTavish. The issue is that...
who is he? That's the thing.
It being in the Highland, people recognize other clans' tartans. So by him wearing his own tartan...
He'll be recognized potentially. That's the whole point.
Right. Are we arguing the same thing?
I don't think there's any difference in what we're saying. So Jamie gives Claire a string of pearls, his mother's freshwater pearls. And Dougal's upset by this, too. And Jamie's like, "Look, dude, they were my mom's. I know very well. And now they're going to be my wife's." So the bridal party makes its way by horse up to this church, or almost to the church. They still have to walk a little ways into the church or up to the church. And Dougal asks Rupert if the arrangements were made. And arrangements meaning the priest. Did they get a priest? Can they do everything? And Rupert says basically that he'd been able to get a special license and padded the place where he was keeping the money. And they walk to the church, and it turns out to be the same church that she and Frank had been married in. And she flips.
I mean, seriously, what are the odds of that?
Redonkulously slim. I don't know. But
maybe there weren't that many churches in that area at that time period. But, I mean, come on.
In the same church? Well, remember that in the beginning of the book, they returned to the area for their second honeymoon.
Right.
Which means they had their first honeymoon there, however long or short it was. So they probably didn't travel far for their honeymoon. They probably, well, now we know, they did get married in the area.
Good God.
In case we were wondering. So that would freak me out. Okay, yes, you traveled back 200 years.
Well, she already feels bad enough going against her wedding vows and marrying a second
even
person.
Even though her husband is not born yet.
Right. But in her heart, he's still her husband. And to show up and have to do it in the exact same place.
I think I would lose a few
God, the guilt. Could you imagine the guilt? No.
So she freaks out. And Dougal thinks it's about the whole cold feet wedding thing. And he's like, "Oh, they're there. It's okay. Everyone's nervous on the first." Thankfully, he thinks it's something else, and not that it would make a difference because she has to go through with it to save her life. So it's not a, there is a choice, but it's the only smart choice, quite frankly. And she says, every once in a while, these lines crack me up, and Claire says, or at least thinks in her mind, "I was about to marry a 23-year-old Scottish Catholic virgin with a price on his head." And I just thought that was, I mean, it was the statement of fact, but it was just, it just made me laugh. So I don't know why. And then we learn that Jamie's last name is Fraser. So she's like, oh, by the way. And
well, because she was like, you can't marry me. I don't even know your last name.
Yeah. And then he says his whole name. James Alexander Malcolm Mackenzie Fraser.
Wait, you weren't expecting me to do that with you, were you? You kind of looked at me expectantly.
Well, you're the only other person right here, so...
Well, I'm sorry, I messed up.
The cat definitely can't help me out, so... Rupert, waiting at the church. Rupert's standing there. I think he's probably standing...
Sure, he did it fatly.
Oh, no. But Rupert is standing there with... slicing a willow twig with a large knife. Like, how threatening is that? He's bored waiting for them to come up, and he's just sitting there like
whittling.
Yeah, well, whittling with his huge knife. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not afraid of you at all. His pistols were conveniently on the rim of the baptismal font, so they were there in case they needed them.
He was just like, this wedding is happening. We're all armed, and you're doing it.
Well, actually, they were mostly unarmed except for Jamie. He had the knife, but I'm not sure if not. Well, they said Jamie had
it was
his
a ceremonial. Yeah. It was more. Well, he did use it.
He did. He ends up using it. Another quote is Claire. This is what Claire feels. I felt like a cold, hollow shell. And they both had cold hands. And she thought maybe he was nervous, too. She has yet to look at him in the face since the wedding had started, since the ceremony had begun. And she looks up at him for the first time. And his face is expressionless. And it's similar to when she had been first doctoring him, first doing wrapping his shoulder. And she tries to smile, but she falters. She's not quite able to do a true smile, I guess. And he tightens his grip on her hand. And Diana gives the beautiful description of both of them holding each other up. And as he begins the vows, his hand tightens on hers. Jamie does his vows flawlessly. Claire does stutter slightly. And when they... get to death do us part, she says, the words had startling finality and everything was still as in suspended animation. So that was, I mean, from going, not only because of what she was having to do, but the fact that she was doing it in the same place where she had married her first husband, whom she had been torn away from, not of her own volition. Holy crap. This is just too much. I would have been like shaking. That's just too much.
Well, she did worse than that. Give her
that's
a second.
True. Give her a second. Just give her a second. So Jamie takes his own ring. They didn't have a ring for her. So
well,
Jamie
it was
takes
really an unplanned thing.
It was pretty much unplanned. Jamie takes his own ring, which is too big, and puts it on her, but then holds her hand so it stays on. And she still has Frank's ring on her left hand. And once they are done with their vows, Jamie goes in to kiss her. And what was she believes was meant to be like a peck or a simple kiss ends up being a little bit more. We don't know exactly how much more, but
she definitely leaned into
She leaned in. She moved in. And people around the audience, the witnesses, were whooping it up and hollering. And Jamie was her enfolding warm solidness and her sanctuary. And I just love those words.
He can be my sanctuary anytime he wants to be.
Now keep in mind, everything I'm about to say that happens, Jamie's still looking at her. This kind of freaks me out. So Jamie knows what's going to happen. And he does not lose eye contact with her. So still looking at Claire, he holds out his right hand, palm up. And Dougal takes out Jamie's own knife and slashes him basically across his wrist. Claire is like, "What?" And... because she, number one, she didn't know this was going to happen, but she definitely didn't know it was going to happen to her. And her hand is grabbed and also cut. And then Dougal presses the two hands together and binds them.
You said his wrists and then her hand. Is that what you're saying?
Well, both of them are, I think it's the wrists for both. And then he binds her hands together because the wrists are put together and he binds them with a cloth.
Okay.
And she gets a little bit woozy, and Jamie tells her that it's almost over, and just to repeat after him. So she basically has no Gaelic at this point, no Gaelic. And Jamie is saying something in Gaelic, some kind of vow, and then she repeats after him as best she can. And then their hands are unbound, and they're officially married. And as they walk back to the horses, Claire faints. And when she comes to, her head is on Jamie's lap. And she assures him she's okay, but it was probably because of lack of food and a lot of drinking. And maybe a little bit of blood loss. Jamie thinks it's because of...
and the shock of the wedding.
Yeah, that too. And he pushes... I thought this was so touching. He pushes a stray curl off her face with a forefinger. I thought that was just so sweet. And she asks about the hand slicing, or the wrist slicing. Those are my words. And Jamie says, it's a bit pagan, but it's customary. A blood vow is customary in those parts. And he tells her the English translation of the Gaelic, which we will not say the whole thing, but it's the thing that we all know and love. You are blood of my blood, etc.
Can I just say something about that?
Of course.
I think it's weird, and they note it in this chapter, that he says, oh, and when you say it in English, it kind of rhymes. Wouldn't that not have been, usually the way that it's originally written is how it rhymes. And when somebody translates it, it doesn't rhyme, which to me would indicate that it was...
may not be the best translation.
Right. Either that it wasn't the best translation or that it was originally an English thing that was then translated into Gaelic.
That's a whole other point, but I agree. It's typically a translation is not the one that rhymes unless it's forced to rhyme, in which case choices must... You can have good translation. It is just so difficult to do because you have to be either very lucky, or if it's poetry and text and lyrics and that kind of thing, artsy text or something, then you can
manipulate it.
You can manipulate word order. Word order is one thing in lyrics and in poetry, that it's your own... meter is important and rhyme is important, or rhyme can be important. In this case, it says it rhymed. So when you translate, you definitely want to keep to the A text from A to B, language A to language B. You want to keep to the A language meaning, even if it's not a direct translation. Because actually, direct translations are usually not what you want. You want to keep the spirit and meaning, and if it's key, it just depends on what you're doing. Whether you're doing a scientific translation, then you definitely want direct translation. You want actual 100% meaning. If you want something to go like a beautiful Gaelic poem or some vows, then I would say you can do one of two things, or you can do two things. One, you can translate them and say, okay, what are you actually saying? You're actually saying blah. Mm-hmm. Or you can try and keep the spirit of it, but make it rhyme.
Right.
And make it kind of artsy-fartsy, but pretty. And make sure you have the words, like, if the Gaelic has the bone of my bone. If it has bone and blood, then you're going to want to keep bone and blood in there. So who knows? I have never studied Gaelic all that much, so I couldn't even try.
We need to have a post-it in here that says Gaelic, so that we say Gaelic all the time.
Yeah. Gaelic is Scottish Gaelic. So if we say Gaelic pretty much all the time, we're going to be meaning Scottish Gaelic, because this is Outlander and Scotland. So then, when she awakes and her head is in Jamie's lap, she looks up and she describes the scene a little bit. We are told that they are sitting beneath an aspen tree. And this I never ever felt so moved to look up anything before when I've read this, but this time I did. And I wanted to know if there was any significance to Diana's choice of that tree. Now, it could just be because there's a preponderance of aspen trees in Scotland. I don't know. But whether this was her choice for this reason or not, it is just very interesting that these are things that can be attributed to aspen trees, or these are facts about aspen trees. So according to tradition, with a capital T, the cross that Jesus was crucified on was made of aspen. So, okay, there's that. Aspens also have a sunscreen-like powder on them to protect them. ... Jamie as protector. I know he's not the tree, but they're underneath them. So maybe a Christ figure tree that protects them. Who knows? And then aspens scar easily and keep the scar forever.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I like that one. Aspens don't begin as seeds, rather as a limb off of a different aspen. One single aspen spawns thousands of other trees, identical DNA. And according to author Chris Castaldo, I quote,
Although the original aspen has died, it lives on through successive generations, unquote. So this made me think, and this is not everything that you can find on aspen. This is just a few minutes search. This makes me think of all sorts of imagery and metaphor, and I'm thinking it may not have been one of the ones that I just read off. Diana had some choice in that. Because it's not like they passed a tree. They were sitting under the tree.
But if she specifically picks a tree, there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying any of those are the reason for it.
Yeah, she may not have, this may not have been it.
I think that if she specified an aspen tree, there's a reason.
I mean, you have sitting under the cross, quote unquote, sitting under some, the whole thousands of trees from one and it never dies. I'm thinking, time travel! I mean, my goodness, what? Summer's giving me this glare like, what was that? So Jamie says that they, meaning the bride and groom, will not be trusted until everything's official. And Claire's like, what do you mean? We just got married. And he's like, yeah, well, that means consummated, folks. So Claire says that they should go get something to eat. And I'm like, that's the response, girl. At least go take, you need to satisfy that appetite because she's going to have a long night ahead of her and awkward. She doesn't know what it's going to be like. So anyway, with that, dear listeners, or even Summer, if it's just her and I, that means next week, Ginger will be having some wine before and during the podcast so that she can
comfortably in a relaxed manner discuss
chapter 15, which is Revelations of the Bridal Chamber. For which we will have another friend of the show, Lene. So we very much look forward to that next week.
Yay! So before we sign off this week, we thought we'd do something a little special because it is the week.
Well, I think it's special, but they may laugh.
Well, special in the way that it's not something we normally do.
No, and it's not.
So we decided that because it is Christmas season, and this coming week is Christmas, that we should do something a little Christmassy. Mm-hmm. So we decided to sing a Christmas carol. Mm-hmm. So without further ado,
here is our Merry Christmas to you.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm.
That about wraps up episode 17 of the Outlander podcast. Don't forget to join us next week, where in the read-along we will be doing chapter 15, Revelations of the Bridal Chamber.
Thank you again, as always, so much for joining us. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Outlander Pod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com. That my young